Good morning and welcome, everyone. This is an open meeting of the Public Company Accounting Oversight Board on April 14, 2009. We welcome those of you who have joined us today both in person and listening to the webcast of this meeting. Today, the board will consider a recommendation to issue a concept release concerning audit confirmations. Confirmation is an audit process by which an auditor obtains and evaluates a direct communication from a knowledgeable third party in response to a request for information regarding account balances, transactions, or other items that comprise a company's financial statements. Confirmations may be an important source of the evidence auditors obtain as part of an audit of a company's financial statements. This recommendation is designed to assist the board in evaluating the PCAOB's auditing standard on audit confirmations at an early stage. Comments from our recent standing advisory group meeting supported our view that it may be appropriate to update the standards and explore ways to clarify expectations with respect to the confirmation process in order to achieve a more consistent and effective application of the standard. Before we proceed with the agenda, I will note for the record that all board members are present. The first and only order of business before the board today is a recommendation that the board issue a concept release to solicit public comment on potential standard setting and audit confirmations. To present the staff's recommendation on this agenda item, I will turn to our acting chief auditor, Jennifer Rand. Jennifer.
Thank you, Mark. Good morning, Mr. Chairman and members of the board. My colleagues from the Office of the Chief Auditor and I are pleased to recommend for public comment a concept release titled Possible Revisions to the PCAOB Standard on Audit Confirmation. The objective of this concept release is to seek public comment on the potential direction of a standard-setting project that could result in an amendment to the Board's Auditing Standard on Confirmations, AU Section 330, or a new auditing standard that would supersede AU Section 330. As you are aware, we have not typically begun our standard-setting process with a concept release. Generally, our first step is to recommend a proposed standard. However, in considering ways to be more transparent and to gain some valuable feedback in helping us to develop a proposed standard, we thought a concept release would be a worthwhile exercise to help us with both those objectives. The current auditing standard on audit confirmations was written over 15 years ago, and there have been significant advances in technology since then. Email, facsimiles, and other electronic communications have become accepted methods of communication in addition to traditional mail. While adding efficiency, some of these electronic methods of communication also add opportunities for skilled individuals to intercept and change responses before they reach the auditor. In analyzing the current standard, we have considered academic research, developments of other standard setters, inspection observations, among other things. We have also discussed the subject twice with the board standing advisory group. The most recent discussion was held a couple weeks ago on April 2nd. I'd like to now turn the floor over to Dean Miranda Gould to describe the key topics addressed in the concept release. Before I do, I would like to express my great appreciation to Dean Miranda Gould and Chris David of the Office of the Chief Auditor, who have been important members of the team that developed the concept release. I also would like to thank the staff of the Office of the General Counsel, especially Bob Burns and Nina Majuri-Azad, for their advice and contributions. With that, Steve.
Thank you, Jennifer. The concept release contains discussion on 9 topics concerning possible changes to the board standard on audit confirmations. These topics include definition of confirmation, requirement to confirm, designing confirmation requests, maintaining control over confirmation requests and responses, reliability of confirmation responses, exceptions and non-responses, management requests not to confirm, disclaimers and restrictive language, and negative confirmation. Each of these areas include important considerations, and we're seeking feedback on each of these areas with through specific questions. I'd like to summarize briefly each of these topics. The first topic I'd like to address is the definition of confirmation. We're considering whether the definition contained in AU Section 330 should be expanded to include direct access to information held by a third party. As a result of advances in technology, auditors may obtain a direct website link into electronic records of an audit client, customer, bank, or other confirming party. Expanding the definition may create opportunities for auditors to use confirmations and improve confirmation response rates. For example, providing direct online access to the auditor may take less time on the part of the confirming party than responding to the confirmation request in written form. The next topic is the requirement to confirm. AU Section 330 establishes the presumption that the auditor will request confirmation of accounts receivable. The standard also provides that this auditor should consider requesting confirmation of the terms of unusual agreements or transactions. We are considering whether requirements of the standard should be elevated to include the presumption to request confirmation of significant terms of complex or unusual agreements or transactions, including complex revenue transactions. The staff also is considering whether the standard should include a requirement that the auditor consider confirming other items such as cash, investments, credit facilities, and debt agreements. The standard also discusses factors to consider in designing confirmation requests, including the form of the confirmation request, the auditor's prior experience on the auditor's audit or similar engagements, the nature of the information being confirmed, the intended respondent, including directing the confirmation request to a third party who the auditor believes is knowledgeable about the information being confirmed. We are considering whether the standard should include a requirement for the auditor to determine whether the confirming party's address directs the confirmation to the intended recipient. Determining that requests are properly addressed includes testing the validity of some or all of the addresses on confirmation requests before they are sent. AU Section 330 requires the auditor to maintain control over confirmation requests and responses. This requirement may need to be updated to address advances in technology that were not anticipated when the standard was written, since such technology provides additional opportunities for skilled individuals to intercept and revise confirmation responses. The next topic I will discuss is reliability of confirmation responses. We are considering whether additional direction may be needed beyond what's included in AU Section 330. Changes to the standard may include performance procedures to address the reliability of responses when alternative forms of communication are used. Factors that auditors may consider when evaluating the reliability of any confirmation include that the confirmation process is secure and properly controlled, the information is obtained directly by the auditor, the information is obtained from a third party who is the intended recipient. The next topic is exceptions on confirmation responses and non-responses to positive confirmation requests. We are considering whether the standard should eliminate the ability for the auditor to omit performing alternative procedures for non-responses to positive confirmation requests and explicitly require the auditor to investigate exceptions in confirmation responses to determine whether or not they are indicative of material misstatements. Performing alternative procedures for non-responses and investigating exceptions to confirmation requests may result in the identification of previously unidentified risks of material misstatements, including previously unidentified risks of fraud that require evaluation. AU Section 330 does not specifically address what actions the auditor should consider when management requests that the auditor not confirm selected accounts, transactions, agreements, or other items. We are considering including procedures for the auditor to perform to evaluate situations when the management makes these requests. Such procedures include inquiring as to the management's reasons for the request and seeking audit evidence to support the reasonableness of that request, evaluating the implications of management's request on the auditor's assessment of relevant risk of material misstatement, including the risk of fraud, and on the nature, timing, and extent of other procedures, performing alternative procedures designed to obtain sufficient, competent audit evidence. Some respondents to confirmation requests include disclaimers and restrictive language in their responses. Such disclaimers sometimes indicate, among other things, that the respondent takes no responsibility for the accuracy of the response. Restrictive language may indicate the response is not appropriate for use in the audit of financial statements. We are considering whether the standard should require the auditor to evaluate disclaimers and restrictive language and determine whether alternative procedures are necessary to obtain sufficient competent evidence. In the concept release, we also consider whether the confirmation standard should continue to allow the use of negative confirmations, and if negative confirmations are allowed, whether the auditor should be required to perform other substantive procedures to supplement the use of negative confirmations. That completes the list of areas for which we are seeking specific feedback. We also would encourage comments from interested parties on topics for which we have not posed specific questions. The staff recommends the board issue the concept release for public comment for a 45-day period ending May 29, 2009. And now I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you, Jennifer. Thank you, Dee. Are there any motions regarding this matter?
Mr. Chairman, I have a motion.
Mr. Gelzer.
I move that the board instruct the staff to issue the concept release on audit confirmations as recommended to public comment for 45 days.
Is there a second?
Second.
We have a motion and a second. The board is proposing this concept release to seek early public input on the potential direction of a standard-setting project that could result in amendments to the PCAOB standards on the use of audit confirmations. Public commentary on the concept release will assist the board and staff in exploring whether improvements to the current requirements on designing and using confirmations and on the confirmation itself, confirmation process itself, could result in a more consistent and effective application of the standard. Since confirmations were first required 70 years ago, they have an important source of evidence auditors obtain as part of an audit. Recent scandals have illustrated the continued value of this audit tool and the need for its effective use. The existing standards were written over 15 years ago, and there have been significant advances in technology and methods of communication since then. I believe it is appropriate for the board to consider whether the current confirmation guidance continues to be relevant in conducting an effective and quality audit in today's business environment. The use of a concept release now will provide additional transparency to the public and allow for early input regarding the board's direction in considering a new standard. I believe that the use of a concept release in appropriate cases can enhance the PCAOB standard-setting process and make our standard-setting process more robust. I'll now turn to my fellow board members for any discussion, and why don't we move right to left today, Steve?
Okay. Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman.
I should have given you warning that I was doing it.
Thank you. I support the staff recommendation that the board issue this concept release to consider how best to update our audit confirmation standard. I hope that we would move expeditiously on this issue. We all know that confirmations are a critical part of the audit process. We have known this since the late 1930s, when the consequences of inadequate confirmations were first publicized in the scandalous fraud at the pharmaceutical company McKesson Robbins Inc., in which the auditor never even attempted to authenticate what turned out to be falsified documents. Indeed, even more recently, the need for an effective confirmation process was highlighted by the Madoff and Satcham fraud investigations, and before that, well-known fraud at the Italian dairy company Parmalat. In 2003, Parmalat was the largest bankruptcy in European history. The company, with operations in Europe, the United States, and Latin America, was found to have misled investors about its true financial condition for a decade. According to the Financial Times, at least 100,000 Italian shareholders, including many pensioners, lost their life savings in the collapse. In each of these cases, auditors failed to adequately authenticate all parties involved in the process of reporting cash and investments. Investors and shareholders paid the greatest price. Virtually everyone agrees that the current auditing standard on confirmations should be modernized. It was written in the early 1990s, before technology gave us today's sophistication in security and encryption of email and online transactions. The standard should address the use and reliability of confirmations received electronically. It should address the authenticity and accuracy of direct access to online account information. The use of such procedures could improve the effectiveness and efficiency of the auditing process. Other concerns about the current standard are that it does not consider how auditors should respond to the disclaimers and restrictive language inserted by a confirming party, the use of which is increasing. The standard also does not address an appropriate auditor response when management asks the auditor not to confirm certain accounts. Most of the audit failures I have mentioned involve the lack of confirmations of cash, investments, or other accounts and agreements such as credit facilities or debt agreements, all of which are not required by the current standard. The current standard only requires the auditor to confirm accounts receivable, with the auditor instructed only to consider the need to confirm complex agreements or transactions. Through this concept release we are considering today, the board is seeking input, direct input, into whether and how the PCAOB's existing auditing standard on confirmation should be revised. Earlier this month, the board heard comments from its standing advisory group, and this concept release incorporates issues raised in that discussion. We are seeking input from all interested parties, including audit practitioners and financial statement users. It is important that the PCAOB also hear from information technology audit and financial reporting specialists in considering the security implications of an electronic confirmation process. Most importantly, the board actively seeks the input of investors whose interests are paramount. The board will analyze, in the course of this potential standard-setting process, the work already undertaken by the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board, as well as the profession. This is an important initiative, and I anticipate a timely and transparent process in moving forward to modernize and adopt the final standard. I would like to also thank Jennifer Rand, Dean Miranda Gould, and Christopher David for all the hard work they put into this recommendation to the board, as well as the General Counsel's Office. Thank you. Bill Gradison.
Mr. Chairman, I support issuance of this concept release, but I do so with a little hesitation. Certainly we have heard increasingly concerns about the transparency of our actions, and this is certainly going to be a very transparent process. But I think it's important to acknowledge there is a conflict between transparency and timeliness. Mm-hmm. We first took this matter to the SAG in September of 2004, 4.5 years ago. That's a pretty long time. This is not the most complex issue this board has or will take under consideration. So we have two times, and more recently in this month. So we have four levels of process, twice with the SAG, I'll count that as one, the concept release, the proposed standard, and then the SEC's comment period. Certainly, that's a lot of transparency, and I'm not against the transparency, but I want to point out how slowly the process moves that way. And the reason I make this point, Mr. Chairman, is just for myself to indicate I view what we're doing now as an experiment. That is, at least not in my case, a commitment to issue concept releases in connection with all future proposals for the revision of auditing standards. Thank you.
Kevin Niemeyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I appreciate the work that has gone into this project, and I also support the concept release being issued today. In the last few years, they have been from notorious public examples of problems in the confirmation process. Saying that, it's not clear to me that all such problems are best addressed in a new standard. I think it's useful in this concept release to take a close look at how our standard handles certain issues, such as ensuring that the auditor maintains control over the confirmation process. But many of the risks described in the release are ones that reasonably diligent auditors already focus on today. And many of the ideas on how to address the risks described in the release are simply more specific ways of achieving the objective of the existing standards. So I wouldn't want readers to assume that the board has in mind wholesale changes or numerous additional requirements in revised standards. The concept release before us today also appropriately asks some questions about new techniques and methodologies. And I will be interested to learn what commenters think about these developments, whether they are helpful, whether they present new risks, and if so, how we can better take advantage of these ideas or address these risks in future standard sets. Of course, we also have the ability to evaluate the usefulness or risk of such developments in our inspections. And as this project progresses, I think it's important to take into account what we're gleaning from inspections and to do a careful analysis of which of our tools will best address any problems that we find. Dee and Chris, thank you for your developing this proposal and for your hard work. Your new face is at the table, and you've done a great job on this project, and I anticipate that you'll bring insight, talent, and dedication to more projects to come. I'd also like to thank Bob Burns, who is also a new member of our team, but not a new face, at least not to be, since I worked with Bob previously. Anyway, thank you.
Ben Gelder. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The concept release the board is considering today explores ways in which we could modernize and strengthen AU 330, the auditing standard that governs confirmation procedures. Confirmation is the process by which an auditor seeks information directly from a third party about some aspect of the client's financial statement. Because confirmation involves obtaining evidence from an independent external source, it provides a high level of audit evidence. AU 330 is not broken. In fact, it is, in my view, basically sound. Confirmation is, however, an area in which I think there's room for improvement. Since AU 330 was written, technological innovations, such as the internet and email, have changed confirmation practice. More broadly, I view this proceeding as a step in the review and modernization of all of our interim standards, with the goal of making any necessary revisions and then adopting permanent CCAOB auditing standards. Reviewing confirmation procedures is particularly timely because the International Auditing and Assurance Standards Board has adopted its own standard on confirmation, and the Auditing Standards Board is now considering how to conform the private company auditing standards to the IAASB's work. In connection with other projects, such as the pending engagement quality review standards, the board has said that in its standard setting, it will consider the provisions of the relevant international standards on auditing, the ISU, and will seek to incorporate useful ideas. The same is certainly true here. Nevertheless, I think confirmation is an area in which we may have some fundamental differences with the ISU. In the U.S., confirming accounts receivable is presumptively mandatory. The reasons for that requirement run back, Steve Harris noted, to the SEC's 1940 McKesson-Robbins case, which was one of the major financial reporting frauds of its day, or perhaps of any day, and one of the seminal events in shaping U.S. auditing standards. In much of the rest of the world, confirmation is simply a tool available to the auditor, but not one that must be employed in every case. We are not considering making accounts receivable confirmations optional, and so this is a difference between U.S. and international auditing that's unlikely to disappear. I also want to make a couple of comments, as others have, about the process that this release reflects. The board hasn't typically begun its standard setting with a concept release, and this one is, to use Bill Gratterson's word, a bit of an experiment. We've been urged to be more transparent in standard setting and to afford interested persons more opportunities to help shape the board's thinking. I hope that the concept release procedure will meet some of those concerns. The release will give investors, preparers, and auditors a vehicle to let us know the reactions to our ideas at an early stage so that those reactions can be taken into account when it comes to drafting standards. This should be a useful supplement to the advice the board already receives from its standing advisory group. The concept release is also an experiment in another respect. As the public will soon see, it consists of a high-level release and then a more detailed appendix. The release is intended to be understandable to general readers. The appendix, on the other hand, is somewhat more granular. It's designed primarily for auditors and seeks to elicit comment on more technical issues. One consequence of this two-document format is that there's some repetition between the release and the appendix. I'd certainly welcome comment on whether this sort of concept release is a step in the right direction on transparency. Finally, as others have, I want to acknowledge the hard work of Miranda Gould and Chris David, the Chief Auditor's Office, were the primary drafters of this release. Bob Burns, Amina Mogiri-Assad, and the Office of the General Counsel have also played important roles in getting this document to the board. Thank you to you also. appreciate a job well done by everybody. It's difficult to ask questions to the staff about a release that doesn't contain any concrete proposals and just ask questions to the public. But I'm going to give it a try anyway to see if we can shed a little light on some of the things that the release raises. First, there have been some comments about our inspection process. But one of the things that really makes the board unique as a standards setter is that we're also the body that conducts inspections of auditors. And I think one of our goals when we started out 6 years ago was to take what we learned in inspections and let that drive or at least be an input into our standards setting. Is there any element of that, Jeremy? To what extent do the things in the concept release reflect issues that have been identified in the inspection program?
Dan, we did consider the inspection process in their concept release, and we have referenced certain problems that inspections noted. But as you noted, AU Section 330 isn't broken, and we hesitate to revise a standard if auditors are just not applying the provisions of a standard that are fairly clear. We are considering that, but we want to fix things in the standards that really create problems or don't contemplate issues that have arisen now and weren't there at the time the standard was first drafted. Inspection and findings, the kinds of things that the inspectors have noted are auditors not confirming receivables and then not documenting how they overcame the presumption to confirm those receivables. They didn't appropriately follow up on exceptions noted on confirmation responses. They may not have performed alternative procedures for non-responses to confirmation requests. And then they've also relied on responses to confirmations that include disclaimers and restrictive language and haven't indicated how that is still appropriate evidence, audit evidence. So as you can see, we have touched on pretty much each of these areas in this concept release.
The release doesn't really set out to do it, but I think if somebody were interested in this topic, if they look back at the 4010 reports that we issued on our inspections, I think both the large and small firm reports have comments about confirmation problems that were discovered.
Mm-hmm.
Something that you mentioned in your comments was the possibility of extending confirmation requirements beyond accounts receivable and perhaps to things like the terms of contract. Particularly contracts to generate revenue. Can you explain a little how that would work? I mean, would the auditor simply send a general requirement to the other party and ask about the terms of the contract? Or would the auditor summarize the contract and then ask the other party if that was correct? Or just what would the practicality here be?
An auditor could do either. In my experience, and I think the more common approach would be for the auditor to list out significant terms on a confirmation form and ask the responding party to agree or disagree, note any exceptions, note any changes on the confirmation request. That's the most typical approach I would expect to see. The auditor could also send a blank confirmation, and that's noted in the AU Section 330 right now. And the blank confirmation would be something along the lines of, you know, we want to confirm the terms, or our auditors want to confirm the terms of this agreement, and could you just summarize the information? I think that would be unlikely. The risks there are that the responding party won't respond. The more work like that a responding party has to do, potentially the less likely an auditor is to get a response back. So I would tend to expect more of the, here's what we think the agreement says, could you agree or disagree, correct anything? One of the SAG members in the meeting April 2nd mentioned that he's surprised that auditors don't just take the agreement and attach it to a confirmation response. So who knows, we may see that as well, and that might not be a bad thing to do either. So there's a couple of different ways.
Well, I guess attaching the agreement, I'm not sure exactly what you get back as a response. I guess this is the agreement. But if there's summarizing involved on either side. I mean, let me ask you this. I know lawyers are pretty arrogant. Maybe this is an arrogant question, but Are the auditors really qualified to summarize the contract? Is that an auditor function?
Well, I don't think it's an auditor function. I would think it would be more management's function. But to be honest with you, I do think auditors have to understand how it would be summarized. They read the financial statements. A significant agreement is summarized quite often in the notes to the financial statements or in MD&A, and they have to be able to consider whether or not the important factors, relevant factors, are summarized appropriately. So I do think they should have that skill.
Let me just ask you from the other direction. You have a summary, you get a confirmation back, signed by a junior clerk. Is that, and what does that mean in terms of verification of an important contract? Or perhaps get a response back that's been rubber stamped with somebody's name, but you know, you don't know who wielded the stamp when you applied it to the confirmation.
Those are good questions, and it's something that I think the auditors do wrestle with. The auditor has a responsibility to make sure the responding party is a knowledgeable party with respect to the information that's being confirmed. So in the case of a contract with significant terms, I would be relatively skeptical that a clerk could know all the nuances. Now, I would expect somebody who negotiated the terms of the agreement potentially to be a confirming party and a knowledgeable confirming party. Oftentimes, what auditors will do would be to send a confirmation request to someone who is the original signing person on an agreement. So, for example, in revenue contracts, it's very common that you'd expect the signing party to be the person to respond to a confirmation request, because that's the person who knows when they signed that and if the agreement was in place at the time that stated on the agreement, so that they could recognize revenue at that point in time. So.
Well, let me ask you about something else that you touched on, which is that's evaluating the reliability of requests, I guess in a little different sense. I mean, we're trying to live in an age when it's easy to create, stationery or paperwork that looks like it came from somebody else. You can create an imitation website fairly easily. You can probably come up with an email address. And just what sort of procedures do you envision for the auditor to assess the reliability of confirmation?
That process, we expect that the auditor would evaluate the responses as they're coming back. So consider factors that might indicate that the responses may not be reliable. Things that Section 330 currently highlighted, facsimile responses. It's difficult to know that a fact has come from an appropriate number. So the current standard actually recommends that the auditor consider calling the confirming party. We'd think that that would be something in a facsimile situation we would be expecting an auditor to do. Things like not receiving the confirmation directly and it coming through the company, that should be a red flag, and there should be some additional procedures that are done. Whenever there's further evidence that there may be some concerns about the reliability, the auditor needs to evaluate those responses and consider the implications of those responses on the assessment of relevant risks related to material misstatements, including the risk of fraud, and on the effects on the nature, timing, and extent of other procedures. The factors that we're thinking about, and we highlight in the concept release, related to electronic confirmations, but I think these are very relevant for any confirmation, would be for the auditor to make sure, the auditor to be comfortable that the confirmation process is secure and is properly controlled, so maintaining control, as you said, that the information is received directly by the auditor, that the information is received from the intended party. And so with reliability, things like maintaining control falls into that. Designing a confirmation request appropriately are all subsets of reliability. So we would expect that the auditor would be designing it appropriately and considering those factors and controlling it appropriately, which will increase potential reliability of the confirmation response.
Okay, well, let me ask you about what you anticipate as auditor procedures in another area. And again, this is one you mentioned, and and one that the SAG had a fair amount of discussion of 2 weeks ago. Disclaimers and restrictive language that are more common. Now, again, something that, from a lawyer's perspective, I have some sympathy with it. But they seem to go all over the place from, we don't guarantee this information is accurate, we haven't checked all our electronic systems, to we've not sought to verify that the information is accurate. I'm not sure what kind of a confirmation you send back saying we haven't sought to verify whether this is accurate or not. But my question is, what kind of procedures can an auditor use to respond to it? I mean, I think the release asks something about, ask for comment on what the required procedures should be, but I have a little trouble envisioning what it would be.
Well, the things that I think we're, let me say it depends on the disclaimer first. So our view would be that the auditor needs to evaluate each individual disclaimer and consider the effect on the relevant financial statement assertions that the auditor is testing in the first place. So if a disclaimer was talking about valuation and the auditor was only testing existence, maybe that disclaimer doesn't have as much effect on the confirmation response. However, if you're looking at valuation and it questions valuation, then there's a problem. So it depends on the disclaimer. The auditor needs to consider the specific language that's in the disclaimer, evaluate the effect of that disclaimer and that language on the relevant financial statement assertions that they're trying to test, document the rationale, and, you know, if it's something they haven't seen before and they think it may be problematic, then you have to consult to higher levels within the firm, is our expectation.
I thought you were going to say the magic word, to consult with the counsel within the firm.
I'm trying to stay away from referencing attorneys because that always gets into more complicated areas.
Yeah, I'm just going to touch on one last time. And one other kind of confirmation that I think people are familiar with is when the auditor asks counsel to provide information concerning litigation or pending claims, or unasserted claims, that sort of thing. Is that within the scope of this concept, really? It is a kind of, at least I view it as a kind of confirmation.
You're right, it is. And we actually have a footnote that talks about attorney letters and other confirmations and other standards, like the related party standards and inventory standards. But specifically, no, the concept release is not contemplating affecting attorney letters. Attorney letters are unique. They go to a specific area, and we're not expecting that this concept release is affecting that at all. We're not touching that standard.
Just one last thing. There was also some discussion at the SAG meeting about how the auditor should react if you request a confirmation in one form and receive a response back in a different form, like, say, a letter is sent to a customer and then an email comes back as a response. I didn't notice anything about that in the release. I mean, is that an issue that we're seeking guidance on?
You're absolutely right. We haven't discussed that specifically in the concept release, and it was a good discussion at the SAG meeting, and it is a good point. I think that happens somewhat often. Sometimes there's not enough room on a confirmation response, so for a standard bank confirmation. If the bank is actually giving additional information, there might not be enough space on the standard bank confirmation to put in the information that they want, and so they'll attach a letter on their letterhead to it. I think that raises questions, and certainly if anybody has some thoughts about that, we would be happy to hear the comments along that and if there are any concerns with that, any problems that people have seen in practice, we'd love to hear about that as well. That just gets to a general point we said before. We've asked specific questions in the concept release, but we're certainly interested in getting feedback on any other areas that we may not have addressed in the concept release or questions, you know, items that we didn't pose specific questions.
Well, that's probably a good point to to stop on. I mean, there was interesting discussion of the subject of the SAG, and I hope when people read the release that there are other things they think we should consider, though. So I'll certainly feel free to include them. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Is there further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to associate myself with the comments of Bill Gradison. I believe in transparency, but I also believe in timeliness. This issue's been prioritized by the board, and I'd like to ensure that we deal with it one way or another in a timely fashion. Oftentimes, these standards take an interminable time to finalize, and so I would hope that there'd be a beginning, a middle, and an end, and I think that's what Bill was mentioning, and I agree with him.
Other discussion? If no further discussion, I'll put the question to the board. All those in favor of approving the motion, say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, nay. The ayes have it, and motion's carried. Congratulations to all of you. We'll now move forward with expedition. That's the
beginning.
The end of the beginning. If there's no further business, this concludes our agenda today, and the meeting is now adjourned. We will rise from the open meeting and reconvene in 10 minutes at 10:20 for the closed meeting. Thank you very much, and thank you again to all of you.